greed, and the 1995 to 2005 credit bubble. Philosophically, the several waves of Washington's conservative-led liberation of financial services contradicted the sounder sort of conservatism, the ideology of a John Adams, a George Washington, or a Theodore Roosevelt, cognizant of the effects of greed and the need to constrain it. Deregulatory thinking, predicated on an exaggeration of Adam Smith's vaunted invisible hand, simply presupposed the legitimacy of whatever so-called market forces might produce. Preening after the enactment of the 1999 legislation, Phil Graham, the chairman of the Senate Banking Committee, proclaimed that instead of regulation, we believe freedom is the answer. Freedom for the financial sector, that is. What simultaneously triumphed, unfortunately, was ignorance of history and a classic onset of greed. Risk eloped with avarice in heady expectation, even while the memory of the NASDAQ crash and Enron was still fresh. These liaisons justified fear that the credit or serial liquidity bubble was an extension and enlargement of the first crisis, not merely an aftershock. Credit card issuers turned buccaneer, helping to lure Americans into record debt. After gaining final approval in the late 1990s to charge customers virtually whatever interest rates and fees they wanted, and with flimsy excuses. By 2005, as we will see, nearly 40% of the typical issuer's profits came from penalty fees. Duncan MacDonald, a lawyer for Citibank in the 1996 Supreme Court case deregulating credit card fees, told the New York Times in 2004, "I didn't imagine that someday we might have ended up creating a Frankenstein." Hedge funds and exotic derivative instruments, including CDOs that pooled everything from snowmobile loans to plastic surgery payment streams, picked up where Enron croupiers had left off. Financial sector debt doubled during the 5 years following the NASDAQ crash. By 2005, it totaled three times as much as the NASDAQ equity vaporized earlier. Housing may be part of the larger casino. As real estate values soared with the help of Federal Reserve Board rate cuts, new varieties of mortgages, as we will see, turned homes into ATM machines and loan terms into crapshoots. Hundreds of different agreements facilitated a wide range of housing market, economic, and interest rate gambles. By 2005, homes, not stocks, were the principal base of U.S. household net worth. In contrast to what unfolded after 1929, the controversies over financial practices actually grew after 2000 as the NASDAQ crash led only into new dimensions of debt, themselves hinting at further global jeopardy. But we are getting ahead of ourselves. The United States is hardly the first nation to lose itself in financial ambitions and self-congratulation. The precedents of the earlier leading world economic powers, alas, make the fallibility and danger points all too clear.